Good morning. This is Kathleen Stevenson for Political Perspectives. My guest is David Lively, Marketing Director for Organically Grown Company, or OGC. He is a participant in this week's Organicology Conference in Portland. David Lively says he became involved in organic agriculture after becoming convinced that the best place to affect social change was in the dirt, at farm level, and dropping out of social work school. He has been involved with Organically Grown Company for many years, including the time it restructured from a nonprofit to a for-profit agricultural marketing cooperative. He has served as warehouser, field manager, production coordinator, buyer, account representative, and marketing director. He has also been a certification inspector, a member of the steering committee for the Alliance of Organic Certifiers, Organically Grown in Oregon, and the Tri-State Symposium on Sustainable Agriculture, and more. David Lively joins us now from the DoubleTree, where the Organicology Conference will begin. Welcome, David. Thanks for being with us.
Yeah, good morning.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Organicology Conference is and what the goal is of this conference?
Sure. I'll give you a little background on how we got to a point of even holding this deal, which is what OGC is. We're a full-blown organic produce wholesaler. We deal with vendors located all over North America and other parts of the world. And we kind of take it as our mission to put together a full spectrum of organic produce available to people, and then they can decide, you know, what they support and don't in it. We'll go as far as we need to go to get product. We try not to go any further than that. And we've got a strong emphasis on local. And in 2006 and 2007, we had a couple of events that we called vendor fairs. And at those events, we invited vendors from all over the place to come up and meet the retailers that are located throughout the Northwest, which includes a lot of cooperatives. I think there's 13 or 14 natural food co-ops, successful ones, vibrant ones in the Northwest, as well as the chains, both independent and national in scope. And after the second of these events, I started thinking about what's next, because what we had accomplished was we'd put retailers on one side of a table and vendors on the other, and they had plentiful conversations about your product line, your packaging, your seasonality, and stuff like that. But what I was seeing was that we needed the conversation to go deeper than that, and that those retailers needed to get that table out from between the two parties, and that the retailers needed to be able to become more aware of the dynamics, often very tense ones, that underlie organic farming. Farming in itself, a serious struggle for anybody attempting it in a country that doesn't value agriculture, and then on top of that, everything involved in organic and all the politics and a whole bunch of other stuff. So I started coming up with this idea in my brain. I was calling Farm Fair, and the people that I tried to run it by kind of looked at me glossy-eyed because somehow I wasn't articulating it well enough. So I shelved it for a year. And then Oregon Tilth, which is one of the four producers of the event, came to us and wanted to do an event together with us. And I said, if we can get Organic Seed Alliance involved, we'll do it. And Organic Seed Alliance signed on. So the three of us started putting together an event, and eventually the Food Trade Sustainability Leadership Association came on as well, so that there's four producers, and we're all very different types of organizations with different agendas within the sustainability and organic trade. And the two things that we really wanted to do that we didn't feel that any other agroecology conferences were doing, one was we wanted a cross-pollination of all the different players within the trade. So the most other events are there focused on growers, like EcoFarm is down in California, or like Provender, they're up here. They're focused pretty much on retailers and manufacturers, and we wanted everybody there. We wanted the seeds people there. We wanted the logistics people there. We wanted the farmers there. We wanted the retailers and wholesalers. We wanted the policy people. We wanted the chefs, and we wanted the citizen eaters. And so that was one of our goals, was to really get everybody in the room at the same time. And then the other thing we really focus on is interaction. We literally consider organicology to be a school in the study of sustainable agriculture and a sustainable food future. And so that's kind of how we differentiate ourselves from other things that are going on.
And what will you be doing there?
Well, I get to do all kinds of stuff, and most of it's fun. We have an event called Cage Debates on Saturday night, and I get to be in Cage Debates. I have a very nice little dress I bought last Saturday to wear to that. And it's a pretty outrageous event. And then we're doing one that we're created this year, which I really think is going to be fun. And I think it really speaks to the heart of what we're doing, is we're going to do a speed dating deal where we pick people from all these different sections of the trade and sectors, and they're going to be the people sitting, and then other people can basically go around in a speed dating format, and in a half hour or so really come into, you know, encounter people that they normally don't deal with, doing things in the trade they normally don't interact with. So I get to lead that, and that's going to be fun. And then tomorrow we're doing an all-day eating intensive, which is going to be, I think, an extraordinary event. We worked with Deborah Kane of EcoTrust to conceive of this deal, and there's a chef component of it, and Slow Food's involved, Chef's Collaborative is involved, the Organic Center is involved. And we're just going to explore, you know, everything from the memory of taste to the science behind organic foods to what retailers and deli managers and chefs are doing in their interactions with people about why they're eating organic foods and the attributes of it and all kinds of stuff like that. So it's a very wide-ranging agenda.
Right. And what do you think the hottest issue will be at the conference?
Well, the one that's just really exploded in our face recently, we already had some stuff. One thing is that a lot of this stuff is seed-oriented. And in my brain, the real places where the crises ahead of us lie, one is definitely in seeds and what's happened with a few conglomerates buying up mostly independent seed companies and patenting seeds and taking control of them. Another is going to be in water. Another is going to be some of the issues we've seen with pollinators and the destruction of pollinators, including the you know, loss of bees. So all of those things have been pretty hot topics anyway, and there's some workshops focused on policy. There's an all-day deal, I think, tomorrow on policy, and there's a thing with the USDA and National Organic Program on Friday. But what really exploded in our face in the last couple of weeks was that Secretary Vilsack, the Secretary of the USDA, completely deregulated genetically engineered alfalfa, which really has the potential to be a disaster for the organic trade and for the organic dairy aspect of the trade specifically. And they, I believe this last week, I haven't caught up with all my emails, but it sounds like they at least partially deregulated Roundup Ready beet seed and beets. So it seems like they're ready to just unleash, you know, GMOs and genetically engineered crops on into American agriculture as legitimate players. And, you know, the organic trade is extremely concerned about it and is really providing some pretty intense feedback on the process of that and the outcome of it. So I expect that's going to be probably number one on the agenda in terms of the conversations in the hallways and stuff.
Can you talk a little bit more about why that decision or on alfalfa has such impact?
Well, basically what you have is, with all these crops, the theory is that they can control those crops and they control, you know, what's happening with pollen and various things. But science has shown that they really just are not capable of doing that. I mean, these things spread and they infiltrate. And one of the ironies of it is that some of these companies, Monsanto primarily, if you're growing crops and their genetic material makes its way into your crop, you are guilty of trespass. They're not guilty of trespass. You are guilty of trespass, and they can sue you over the fact that you're now growing, you know, their patented crops, which is an interesting deal. And, you know, legally, we're not allowed to use, in the organic systems, we don't use anything that's genetically modified, genetically engineered. The European community is extremely wary of it and has a lot of barriers up against it. Even conventional growers in the United States have had crops rejected from international markets because of GMO contamination. So it's a pretty big issue. And consumers, a lot of them, part of the reason they're eating organic is that they have been led to very specifically believe that these crops do not have GMOs in them we are not using genetically engineered varieties in our production systems.
Mm-hmm. Now, there's a term that's come up in the discussion of this that's called coexistence.
Yeah.
Can you explain what that is and how it relates to this whole issue?
Yeah. Well, coexistence is a term that the first time I heard it, Secretary Vilsack was using it, and it basically is the concept that you're going to find a way for the organic agricultural community, the conventional agricultural community, and the biotech ag community to all coexist on the same playing field. And it's a pretty profound concept in terms of whether we accept it or not. A lot of the people in the organic trade think that it basically came into being because we're becoming a threat to, you know, the paradigm that currently exists, which is, you know, when organic was only 2 or 3% of the market, they were debating whether we were just a fad or a niche. Now they know for a fact that we're steadily in the market and we're not going away, and we continue to grow at, you know, 10, 15, 20% rates a year. I've seen statistics that organic produce is anywhere from 5 to 10% of the produce market at this point. And we have started to use the courts to challenge some of this stuff. Specifically, there was a challenge this last year by Center for Food Safety and Sierra Club and High Mowing Seed Company and I believe Organic Seed Alliance on this Roundup Ready beet seed introduction in Willamette Valley. And it was a successful challenge because the USDA had not completed its environmental impact statement work. And I think that what the powers that be are seeing is that we are going to turn to the courts and that we're going to challenge them, and that while we might not be able to have the kind of power we can get legislation passed that would really confront them in a court of law, we might have rights that would be recognized and protected. And probably the best way to keep us out of those courts would be to get us to agree to this concept of coexistence, wherein we agreed that we were going to be at peace with those powers. And a lot of people have really spoken out against this, and I am one who considers it to be a very bad idea. And in the writing that I've done to people in the trade, I've stated that I believe coexistence has many similarities to something like don't ask, don't tell, or separate but equal, and that it asks us to pretend that a compromise has been reached that provides balance, when in reality, it simply puts all the weight of tolerance on us and allows the oppressors to pretend they are operating in a system that delivers justice. And I know Ms. Bushway, who's the head of the Organic Trade Association, sent a pretty strong letter to Secretary Vilsack, and I've seen National Organic Coalition and some others do the same. And basically, the stance we're attempting to take is the only way that coexistence is going to work is for the pushers of genetically engineered, genetically modified crops and seeds to handle the liability if their, you know, products cross the line onto our grounds or into organic farming systems, organic food systems. And short of that, we just don't see how, you know, coexistence could work unless they're willing to handle the liability for their own activities.
And I don't quite understand that. I mean, it seems like if you're going to coexist, you're going to be infiltrated, and then you're not going to have organic crops. Is that too simplistic?
That's pretty much what we're assuming. Or that there would have to be a radical redefinition of what organic is. And a lot of people are of the opinion, I was reading a letter the other day, and one of the guys in it said, I'll quote him, he said, "From my view, the goal of Monsanto is to contaminate the entire food supply with GMOs, which will lead to A, food shoppers accepting this as a fact, and B, thus why even bother with buying organic if it's already filled with GMO pesticide-laden material." So basically, if they can play tag with all the farmland and, you know, basically destroy virginity, then there's no, you know, there's no reason to attempt to, you know, protect it anymore because they've done away with it.
Mm-hmm. I'm speaking with David Lively. He is marketing director of Organically Grown Company. He is a participant in this week's Organicology Conference in Portland. Now, I was pointed to an article by Ronnie Cummins, who wrote about what I think he calls the organic elite. He says, spearheaded by Whole Foods Market, Organic Valley, and Stonyfield Farms, who he seems to be saying have cut a deal with this coexistence. Do you know about that? Can you talk about that?
I can kind of talk around it a little bit. I'm aware of what Ronnie wrote. I have not read everything he wrote. I am aware that there have been some statements from some of the players, you know, quote unquote, in the organic trade, You know, one thing that happened was when Vilsack decided to run this idea of coexistence by people, you know, some people were invited to the meeting, other people weren't invited to the meeting. Ronnie was furious because he was not invited to the meeting, as I understand it. And, you know, that was a concern for the whole trade because we were definitely like, okay, we've got a handful, you know, I mean, we've never organized ourselves in a way to decide who speaks for us, and other than the OTA to some degree. And so there was definitely concern in terms of, okay, who's going to be in that room and who's not, and what if they brokered a deal that none of us can live with, which did not happen. And I have seen some stuff where some parties in organic trade have said, you know, realistically, we are stuck with this. We are just going to be stuck with it, and we're going to have to figure out what to do with it. And that's not any different on one level than what we did with pesticides. You know, when organic agriculture started really growing and we really started farming on, you know, large scale, you know, farmland, one of the things we encountered was that there were pesticides just about everywhere, and we had to work around that. And what we did in that case was we said, our tolerance levels are 10% of what the USDA's are for a conventional ag, and a lot of soil testing takes place. Certain crops are not allowed to be grown on certain soils due to uptake potential. But we knew we were living in a contaminated world in that case. In the case of GMOs, we were hoping to avoid that, and we still are in terms of attempting. You know, we had one horse was already out of the barn, but it's not like that means we got to let every horse out of the barn. On the other hand, I've seen at least one letter that I believe all of those organizations and a number of others signed on to, that they stated very unequivocally that, you know, they are absolutely opposed to GE and GMO and will, you know, staunchly continue to be opposed as long as possible on it. So I'm not 100% certain that Ronnie is accurate in his assessment of those organic elites.
Now, how can farmers, organic farmers, and others who don't have a lot of money, how can they fight Monsanto and with the amount of power and influence, and now seemingly with this connection to Vilsack, how can they fight that?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think one thing that can happen is they, you know, they're going to have to hook up with some people who have the resources or the power to do that, which is what took place in this case with Roundup Ready beet seed here in the Willamette Valley. And there definitely are, you know, there are large-scale organizations with, you know, legal capacities and challenge capacities who take this issue very seriously. And so I think there are opportunities for growers to bring up whatever issues they've got with contamination or just concern, you know, to sign on to letters that the OTA has got. That's a great thing to do. Last time I looked, OTA had submitted about, you know, people associated with the Organic Trade Association had submitted over 24,000 comments to President Obama around the deregulation of alfalfa, and I'm sure that number is higher than it was. And so, you know, there's a number of ways to react to the deal, both just in terms of grassroots feedback to government, as well as coming into legal challenges in the structure of that.
And will those things be talked about at the Organicology Conference?
Oh, yeah.
So, can you talk a little bit more about the issues related to local and organic that might be of interest to people in this field? Basically, how do you combine them in the marketplace, and how do you make the product affordable but still allow organic farmers to stay in business and make a living?
Well, that's a chunk. let's see. Well, we, you know, our commitment was always to organic as growers, and, you know, our business started as, I think there were about a dozen of us that were in the upper Willamette Valley in the Eugene area that put together organically grown. It actually existed as a nonprofit, and what we did was we rewrote the bylaws and became an ag marketing co-op, operating pretty much under the same guidelines as a Blue Diamond or a Sunkist or an Ocean Spray, which are big ag marketing co-ops. And, you know, our goal was basically just to get our own stuff sold. We were tired of doing our own marketing. We wanted to stay on the farm and farm rather than hire people to farm while we ran around town and delivered stuff and sold it and tried to collect money. And the first thing we ran into being in the Northwest was that we could only really, you know, supply the market about 5 or 6 months of the year with most of our crops. And we were, you know, there was definitely a serious debate. We had growers involved who only wanted to sell our product, but we were like, what are you going to do at the warehouse for 6 months? What are you going to do with your employees for 6 months? there was nobody in the role of a wholesaler, so we were able to take it on. Didn't really have any competition, just kind of walked into it and began, you know, stayed in business 12 months of the year. And, you know, like I said earlier, strong emphasis on local. So we're working with California, but as soon as the local tap comes on, we start turning off our, you know, routing a product out of California and go with local seasons for as long as we can go with those. So we've always had an emphasis on local, but we also believe that organic agriculture is a superior form of agriculture, and we believe that anyone on this planet is going to be better fed if they're being fed by organic farmers than conventional farmers. And so we support not only our local and regional growers, but we support organic farmers all over the world and are acutely aware of the fact that even if you never meet them, if you're buying, say, cherry tomatoes from Del Cabo, who are working down on the Baja in Mexico, you are providing those people with an alternative livelihood to the ones that they had prior to really becoming viable in farming, which was mostly serving tourists who had traveled down there, and giving them an income level that they didn't have before, and allowing them to run agricultural systems that are free of the, you know, pollutants that conventional systems typically deliver. So we really believe strongly in a worldwide organic ag movement, and a lot of that gets consumed locally, but some of it is designed for export. You know, we work with growers in South America who they're in very rural areas. There is no industry there. There is no opportunity to participate in the world economy other than via the fruits and vegetables they grow. And we believe those people are worthy of support, and so we do that. So our emphasis has always been on organic, but we also really we really do focus on, I wouldn't say local as much as regional, because local is one of those terms that is so difficult to, you know, describe or define or defend. I've talked to people who consider local to be, you know, 10 or 15 miles from where they're at. I've read articles where people are like, it's as far as you can drive in a day, which in a day I can drive into Canada. You know, I could make a claim that about half the Western United States is local based on where I could get in a day. And regional works, I think, more for us in terms of looking at our watershed and looking at our bioregion and some stuff like that. Our brand Ladybug is a regional brand that includes growers from Oregon, Washington, Idaho, and British Columbia. I have been really happy to see the growth of local in terms of the CSAs and in terms of the farmers markets, because one thing that was really obvious to us is that agriculture in the Northwest exists on a much smaller scale than it does some places like California. And a lot of these growers can interact with an organization like ours and sell us some of their crops at where, you know, they're getting, you know, they're growing large volumes and they're getting what a wholesaler will return them. But a lot of these growers really do need direct contact with the public who can really give them premium prices on their product if they're going to remain viable. And so I think the diversity that we've seen in the marketplace with the growth of these other channels has really been a good thing.
So when someone says, should it be local, or when you have a choice between local and organic, how do you answer that?
Well, the first thing I'd do is I'd want to know what the local grower is doing, because, you know, my brother, who's one of our account reps, Tom, his theory is, he says, If I'm not going to buy organic, if I'm going to buy conventional product, I'd actually rather buy it from somewhere else where a grower is polluting their watershed rather than my own watershed. So his answer would be, if it's a conventional local grower, he's not going to support them. And I think that's a big issue, is what does a local grower do? Is a local grower running a pretty clean operation, or are they spraying fruit trees 12 times a year? And what is the impact on their local watershed and their local, you know, their airshed and all of those kind of things. So I don't think it's a cut and dry deal in terms of local organic. You also get into this whole issue of food miles, which is an extremely oversimplified approach to looking at carbon footprint and what goes on, because food miles are actually a fairly minor part of it. And a food mile is not a food mile even. We were recently talking to a guy about the importation of fruit from New Zealand, and they can actually bring fruit from New Zealand to the Northwest for a much smaller carbon footprint than growers in the Northwest can grow, store for months, and distribute produce within our region using trucks. So, you know, it's a very complex issue in terms of what does local mean. Deborah Kane, I remember a couple of years ago, wrote a deal, or a year ago maybe, in Edible Portland, where she was talking about how she was driving around Portland and she was realizing how many small farm trucks, a lot of them very inefficient vehicles, were on the streets delivering to restaurants, and wondering whether that was the smartest way to do that, or whether it would have been better to work with somebody like us, where those guys have their product picked up on farm and delivered in a more efficient manner by a single truck that is run on biodiesel in our case. And so those are the kind of things that need to be looked at. And I think, you know, one of the things that's pretty fun being in the organic trade is that you've got very sophisticated eaters asking very sophisticated questions and doing a really good job of challenging us. And so we're engaged in these kind of debates internally, even among ourselves and our businesses, all the time.
Mm-hmm. David Lively, we only have a couple minutes left. Is there anything you think's important to say to the listener, the average person, interested in this issue in the last couple minutes of this interview?
Which issue is that?
Oh, I just thought maybe you had a specific area that you thought maybe we didn't cover, or something that you wanted to emphasize about organic issues in general.
Yeah, well, I think people getting involved and really seeing food as a political deal is a big issue. And one of the things that happened in the last couple of years that was great was that the farm bill began to be looked at as the food bill. And I know Michael Pollan was one of the big pushers of this in a lot of his literature and stuff, and a lot of the people in the trade were. But a lot of consumers have started coming to the table in terms of addressing the policy nature of food in the United States. And I think that is a tremendous thing. And we saw a lot of changes in the last farm bill addressing that stuff, addressing things like food in schools, farm-to-school programs and stuff. The next farm bill, we're going to be talking about organicology. There's some people within the organic and sustainable food trade that are even starting to talk about a 50-year farm bill in terms of seeing this thing over the long haul rather than just based on, you know, short-term goals and profitability. And I would encourage any, you know, eater out there to get engaged in, you know, dialogue around the issues of what's happening with seeds and whether we're even going to have access as citizens to a seed inventory in 10 or 15 years from now. And a lot of these issues around, genetically engineered, genetically modified stuff and a lot of the other issues that are on the table, that the government is in place to listen to us as citizens, and it's a vital area for all of us.
Thank you, David Lively. Thank you so much for being with us today and talking about these issues.
Okay, it was great. Thank you.
Uh-huh. I've been speaking with David Lively. He is marketing director of Organically Grown Company. He is a participant in this week's Organicology Conference in Portland. This is Kathleen Stevenson for KABA.